The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Now, we're joined by a woman who has built a career and business in the beauty industry over the last 30 years. Coming from a family with a strong entrepreneurial streak, she made the leap from working in the industry to setting up her own clinic back in 2006. Only after a couple of years in business, she found herself on the verge of bankruptcy after being tied into a 25-year lease. She's since turned that around and is one of the leading practitioners in Ireland's aesthetics industry, which is estimated to be worth $200 million a year. Ivana Breen, founder and clinical director of Akina Beauty and Laser Clinic, newly renamed this week the Ivana Breen Skin and Laser Clinic. You're very welcome. Good morning to Ivana.
Good morning, Ashley.
You've been listening to Bill there and
yes,
talking about those companies. You know, we've all been there. It's such a hard graft, and some of those businesses that did become the zombies and ghosts. Can you reflect back on that period where you were at a junction and it was, I could fail here or I have to get a resolution? And in your case, it was trying to get yourself out of that lease that you'd signed up to.
That's it. I mean, at that time, it was very difficult to get a lease because it was the height of the boom still. And listening to what Bill was saying there about having somebody who knew figures. I mean, I was very good at what I did in the beauty industry, but I had taken some bad advice from an accountant, and that led me to that lease that I really should never have signed. And it really meant that from the get-go, I was struggling to just constantly pay that rent.
Yeah.
And it never gave me an opportunity to really grow or expand, or I was just constantly just paying the rent. So eventually it got to a point where I had to make a decision, either I go bankrupt or that, you know, it's we had to do something very drastic.
And what did you do? Like, that's a breaking point moment.
It really was. And for many years, like, very quickly I realised that the lease was a bad lease. And that's when the panic kind of set in. I said, well, now I really have to make this work because I'm not getting out of this. It's I've signed the lease, I'm contracted, I have to do it. And ultimately it came to a point where I realised I couldn't do it any longer, and I went to the landlord and I said, look, this isn't going to work for me. I need to get out. And obviously he had the piece of paper to say, well, you can't.
Yeah.
So I had to come up with a proposal to him, and I ended up buying myself out of that lease.
And it all ultimately worked out. But
yes,
that must have been incredibly stressful, where you're years into, just as you say, paying the rent, trying to kind of get yourself to some level of profitability, finding your route to market, being able to expand. You're then going into a negotiation where, you know, my only way out is to buy myself out. Like, that must have just been sleepless nights back at the time. This, we're talking 2006
no idea
onwards.
Yeah. I mean, sleepless nights, and and I had a small child at the time as well. So it was sleepless nights from worry from the business, and also from a child who wasn't sleeping. So how I got through that point, that time, it was a very, very low time in my career, and it was incredibly difficult. I felt like I'd failed.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't know what I was doing, and I really had to dig deep to keep going, because the thing was, I was like, well, do I give up or do I keep moving forward, or what am I supposed to do here? Because clearly I've made a mistake and I don't want to continue making mistakes. So, yeah, it was very difficult. It was very difficult on my family as well, having to go to my husband and say to him, we're in big trouble. And we need to fix this. So that was a really hard part as well.
And you fixed it. And of course, the business has gone on to thrive. But at that moment, your dad gave you some wise counsel as well. And I suppose your dad has an entrepreneurial streak, and your mom had as well. But talk to me about that moment of your dad just giving some profound, wise advice, which we all need in our lives at times.
Dad was great because he had been through his up and downs as well. So obviously listening to him was key for me. And he just said to me, this too will pass.
Yeah.
And long before that phrase became popular, he was saying, you know, you have to just look at what you can do today and do what you can today, and then, you know, worry about the rest. Is it going to be a problem in a year's time? Is it going to be a problem in a week's time? You know, just focus on what you can do and make that your priority.
How do you take your power back? How you can take control of it? And he was able to give wise counsel like that because he had done it. He was a member of An Garda Síochána and left to start his own business.
That's right. He was a guard and then he was a detective. And he then decided, he always wanted to be in his own business, and he decided to set up his own haulage firm.
And how do you go about doing that? Like, how do you go from, you know, public service vocation where you've got your permanent, lovely, pensionable career to then starting out? How did he even fund it at the very beginning?
Well, that was the interesting part. And it's kind of laid the ground for the next couple of years for us as a family. They remortgaged the family home and we moved it into rented accommodation. Sorry, they sold the family home and we moved into rented accommodation, and he funded it that way. So, I mean, he was fantastic and very successful ultimately with his business. But there were lots of highs and lows.
And like selling off the family home, going into then a market where you were moving from house to house, rent, you know, contract lease to what, would you have been conscious of the time? This is our life right now because my dad is trying to do his thing. He's trying to follow his sense of purpose. Would you have been aware of the highs and lows because of that venture?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. And, you know, it was I come from a very large family. There's seven children in my family and I'm the second eldest. So there was a lot of responsibility put on us to help out at home. And, you know, Dad would have been away a lot in the beginning, going on trips with the truck. And yeah, so he was missing. So we had to help out at home, and we knew why we were helping out. You know, it was to help Mum with the other kids and that Dad wasn't there. But it was still such a learning curve as well.
And your mum, a home economics teacher, but she also dabbled in lots of businesses, catering and jewellery and Tupperware, I think.
That's right. Yeah. She, because there was so many of us, I mean, there was always, you know, we always needed that little bit more money, and putting food on the table was difficult. And certainly in the earlier years. So she would do things on the side like Tupperware, and cabochon jewellery was one that she did as well. And at one point she worked, they did the catering for a pub at one point as well. So, yeah, she was well able to turn her hand to things as well.
Did you ever get to partake in the famous Tupperware parties? Was that a thing?
Yes. And like the amount of Tupperware that we had at home and lids that didn't match boxes. And so I would have gone with Mum to help her set up the parties and take orders and all of that kind of stuff.
So you were selling from an early age, pitching?
From an early age, I was encouraging people to buy Tupperware.
Do you still have some of that Tupperware?
I still have a Tupperware. I have a cream shaker that my family always laugh that I still have it. That it, you literally just, it's a piece of plastic, you shake cream and it whips cream. It's fantastic.
Amazing. Great investment. So a really busy household between your dad on the road, your mum being a teacher, but doing all of her side businesses and side projects as well. Like that must have just, as you say, taught you such a work ethic, but also like I suppose a respect for money. Like if you were seeing from an early age just clothes and food, it's all hard earned.
Yeah, I mean things were very tight when I was young. My younger siblings didn't get as much of that because obviously things got better. But when I was younger, definitely things were very tight. And you know, new shoes came when there were holes in your shoes, and you had one pair, and that was it. And it was hand-me-down clothes, and you know, food-wise, it was the bit. My mother was an amazing, and I suppose it's the home economics background really came into that for her. She was amazing at creating food out of the smallest and simplest of things, and she was a fantastic cook. So we were really lucky in that point of view, and she was very much. Both of them were actually, you know, that you ate food from the soil and no packaged stuff. So we got great
ahead
nutrition.
Of her time.
Yeah, very much ahead of her time. She was recycling when nobody knew what recycling was, you know.
And were you faster to put up your hand to go out in the road with your dad and maybe get off the island than you were to go to Tupperware parties?
Well, Dad used to take us, we'd get turns to go in the truck and to go on a journey in the truck. And we used to, whoever got to go, you know, everybody else was jealous because you knew you got junk food when you went in the truck. You'd get French Francies and biscuits and crisps and whatever drink you wanted. We were never allowed to have fizzy drinks at home. And, you know, we'd always have that on the truck. So that was lovely.
That was the pocket money hard earned.
Yeah.
And what about school then? Like when you cast your mind back, like what have you memories of starting at school, secondary school? Did that come easy to you? Or did you have an entrepreneurial mindset when you look back now?
I was very young starting school. Well, I say I was young. I was going on four. My birthday's in October and I was going on four. But there wasn't room for me in the junior infants class. So I was moved straight into senior infants. So I was always the youngest in my class. And I always felt that little bit behind. But, you know, the teacher's like, no, she's fine. She's well able for it. But it did mean that by the time I got to Leaving Cert level, I was only 16 doing my Leaving Cert. So it was way too young and hadn't a clue about what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go with my life. And although I was quite mature for my age, not mature enough to be ready to go out in the big bad world. Of course, I thought I was.
So age 16, Leaving Cert done. What did you want to do next?
I hadn't a clue. So I managed to convince my dad to let me go to Paris to do au pairing. So my mum was not enthused by the idea, but my dad would say to her, you know, you wanted to be an air hostess and your father didn't let you, so you need to let Ivana do this.
Right. So she was guilt-tripped a bit.
She was guilt-tripped into it. And so off I went to Paris. Hated au pairing because that was in a time, and I'm showing my age now by saying this, it was in a time when there was no internet, there was no mobile phones. You got one phone call a week on a card that you went to a phone box to talk to your family. So it was incredibly lonely.
So you weren't living your best life in Paris?
Definitely not. And the family that I went to, I thought it was fantastic when I heard about it. They were giving me my own apartment. I didn't have to live with them. And when I thought that was fantastic on the looking at it, once the reality set in, it actually meant I was very lonely.
Mm.
Now, I did have, she's now my sister-in-law, but then friend was with me and the two of us were great support to each other over there. It was a tough time.
So you came home,
yes.
You were lonely, you were homesick.
But
you made a commitment, you knew, right, got to get a thing going here. And you chose beauty and you knew, right, I got to go here, learn, upskill.
So I always was interested in beauty. And like even as a child, we'd sit on a Friday night and I'd do my mum's makeup for her and I'd take all her makeup off to put it on again, take it all off again. So I knew I wanted to do something in beauty. I loved biology in school. I had looked at the course, but it was so expensive and my parents just didn't have the money to pay for me to do it. And I said, look, I'll pay for it myself. So I took out a term loan. I worked three different jobs to pay back that loan while in college. And that's how I got into college and did the year in beauty.
And so worked as a beautician, started your own company, as we heard about earlier, and it has thrived and an amazing success story. So congrats to you on everything.
You.
Talk to me now as you think about the beauty industry of the future and what you think it is going to look like now in 10, 20 years time, because I imagine you're constantly having to be a futurist and build now for where you think customers and the industry is going to be at in 10, 20 years.
100%, yes. And it's actually interesting that you ask that because it's why I've kind of started going down this particular road that we've recently taken on. I was doing research on beauty trends and the industry and where we're all going. And what came up was personalization and that everything is going to be personalized. So in 10 years time, I believe that, you know, mass produced skincare products are going to be not as common as they are now. And that's why I brought in the Skin Made skincare brand into our clinic. It's from Germany and it's where we measure the skin for lipids and hydration and we can create a moisturizer that's bespoke to the skin.
So we're going to be using what? Algorithms, AI to help understand exactly what we need and it will change through seasons, so all the time tweaking and changing to get you the right formula.
Exactly. And the beauty of it is that the more you get measured, the more the algorithm understands your skin, so it gets even more and more precise.
So sophisticated.
It's so sophisticated.
Do you think today, so that's the future, today, do you think that we're mostly where we can afford it, like where you have disposable income, that we are prioritising self-care a little bit more, whereas maybe years ago you kind of had notions if you were going for a facial?
That is exactly it. I mean, when I started out, you had notions if you had a facial, yeah, and it was few and far between that people would have it done. Whereas now it is very much people are coming in for their monthly facials. And a lot of the people that I see, there's nothing wrong with their skin. It's not a case that they have acne or anything like that. It's that they just want to maintain good skin, healthy skin, and age well.
In all of that, we're then seeing people come in, I imagine, to you and other retails looking for Botox and fillers. What is the trend line there? You know, have you seen a huge increase? Is that becoming more normalised? Are people admitting and confessing to the Botox and fillers?
I don't know if they're admitting to it as much as the, you know, there's a lot of that out there. If Botox is done well and fillers are done well, you wouldn't know that the person has had them done. But there is definitely a lot more people getting it done. It's Ireland is a little bit behind the States and the UK when it comes to aesthetics, but we're catching up quickly.
And just finally, Ivana, is there a little bit of a Wild West around the Botox and fillers? Like, are we going to have to see more regulation in this whole area?
Yeah, because it's not regulated at all. And anybody can, ironically, anybody can go and do a course in fillers and inject into the skin. Whereas with Botox, you have to be a medic to do it because it's a medicine. With fillers, you don't. And the irony is that fillers can do more damage than Botox can.
Finally, given, you know, your extraordinary career over decades, if you're looking back at that 16-year-old self, you know, trying to figure out what's next, what would you say to young women thinking about, you know, being an entrepreneur, starting a business? Is there one great learning or mantra that you have coming out of it all?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. There's so many, but I think learn to have the belief in yourself. I think that's the key to learn how to be confident.
Okay, back yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Ivana Breen, thank you so much for that. That was Ivana Breen, who this week renamed as Ivana Breen Skin and Laser Clinic. Thank you so much for joining us.